This episode of The Campfire is brought to you by Harry's. For guys like you who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com and get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code CAMPFIRE when you check out. Again, $5 off your first purchase. Go to harrys.com and enter the code CAMPFIRE when you check out. Thanks, Harry's.
Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's Campfire.
Welcome to the Campfire. I am Jim Harold. So glad to be with you once again. Hope you're having a great week and ready for some great Campfire stories. Now, a quick note, you should know we're having a great spring sale over at my plus site, jimherold.net. And you're probably wondering, well, why do I care about that? I'm listening to the Campfire. Aha, my friend, exactly. Did you know that there are many, many, in fact, hundreds of Campfire episodes available over at jimherold.net, my plus side? You can't get those on the free feed, but you can get them over at jimherold.net. In fact, right now there are 210 episodes that you can no longer get on the free side over at jimherold.net. Not to mention the Paranormal Podcast, 367 of those episodes that are available, you can't get elsewhere anymore. They're now under the premium site. But not only that, 41 episodes of Ghost Insight, which have never been on the free feed. And then we chime in with our new show that we're going to be rolling out, our Ancient Mystery Show. Then you've got 86 episodes of my UFO Encounters program that have never been on the free feed. Then you get 123 episodes of The Other Side that have never been on the free feed. Then 78 episodes of The Conspiracy Corner that have never been on the free feed. A bunch of interactive video webinars archived over there, conference-level presentations you can watch 24/7. Never been on the free side. Then there's Crime Scene, 80 episodes of that that have never been on the free feed. And again, all of those hundreds of classic paranormal podcasts and campfires. Plus, online meet and greets with me periodically. So I think you'll see it's a good deal, and we've got a great deal now. We're giving you $1.50 off per month if you sign up now for a new membership. And if you sign up for a yearly membership, you already save money off the regular price, but then we're taking off another $15 if you use the coupon codes we have listed over there. If you click on the Buy Now banner, you got to check it out. It is the Plus Club. I think it's a great deal if you love this content, but I guess you do since you're tuning in. You can listen on your iPod, you can listen on your iPhone, you can listen on your Android phone, you can listen on your computer. If you're listening to this, you can listen to the Plus Club podcasts. So I hope you check it out. It's over at jimherold.net. Now, with no further ado, let's get to the Campfire stories. We have a return caller. Kimberly from California joins us. She's going to tell a tale of a spooky trip to a cemetery with her brother. And she got maybe a little more than she bargained for. Kimberly, welcome back to the program. I know before you told us a great story about some time in Peru, and we can't wait to hear this story about a trek to the library, to the cemetery.
Oh, well, basically the story starts when I started opening up to the other side. Like most kids, when they're little, you know, you're pretty open to that kind of stuff. But it really wasn't until my early years in high school that I started seeing and hearing all kinds of things. And I honestly thought I was crazy for a while. I kind of kept it to myself until I finally broke down and told my mom that I thought I needed help. And long story short, basically we discovered that I wasn't crazy, thankfully, that I just have a very generous gift. And, And being in high school, you know, I would do a lot of parlor tricks for the kids, and, you know, that would come up to me asking if I was psychic or whatever. I hate that word, by the way. But, you know, all those parlor tricks were great because it was kind of like a good confirmation for me. Every time somebody said, wow, I can't believe you knew that, or how did you know? It was kind of like a way for me to say, oh, wow, okay, so maybe this is a real deal. But the problem that I ran across a lot, especially with people who I was close with, was wanting to prove it. And, sure. You know, I had a boyfriend at the time who told me that, you know, I was just doing it for attention or whatnot. And so when, you know, I finally told my brother, I grew up with him, and, you know, I always considered him my guardian angel. He's my big brother. you know, of course he wanted to believe me. He wanted to support me as much as possible, but unfortunately, you know, he's got the scientific brain. So it's one of those, I really want to believe you, but I kind of have to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time he was going to college in Chico, and he approached me and he said, you know, our cemetery is supposed to be really haunted. Would you want to go with me? And of course I said yes, because that was, you know, prove it to him and prove it to myself. And I was curious, and everything was new and exciting. So, like an idiot, we drove over to the Chico Cemetery at night after it was closed, and hopped a fence and started walking around. So my brother was dating this gal at the time, and she wasn't the brightest crayon in the box, so she was nice enough. And, you know, she was excited too and easily spooked, and we're all just kind of creeping around the cemetery. And about an hour or so in, my brother started nagging me. Do you see anything? What do you see? What do you hear? What's going on? So, you know, I started listing off things that I was actually hearing and kind of looking around. As a side note, I love cemeteries because it's really quiet there. I mean, they're all at rest, right? So with any more, I like to just hang out just for peace and quiet. But for some reason, that one was really, really active at night. And, you know, I would talk about, well, this one feels that way, or, you know, nothing too crazy. I see a lot of shadows, which, of course, now I know are, you know, shadow people. It's a pretty common occurrence. And anyway, so we're walking through the cemetery, and I stop because I see something.
Right.
And immediately, it's a little girl, and she's clear as day. And she's kneeling in front of a stone. And I am immediately afraid because I'm thinking, holy crap, there's this little girl in the middle of the night trapped in a cemetery. She probably can't get out. What kind of parent leaves their kid in a cemetery?
Right. You're because thinking again, this is a human. This is somebody living.
Exactly. Exactly. Because up until this point, you know, for most people who see, it's mostly in your mind's eye. To see an apparition that looks, you know, like you or me, that's A, either a very special type of gift, or B, they really, really want to be seen, and that takes a lot of energy. So, fooled me, you know, and my brother noticed that I had stopped, and I got really quiet, and he said, what's going on? And I told him, I said, oh my gosh, there's a little girl over there. We have to go help her. Do you have your cell phone? We all start pulling out our cell phones and start walking over, and as my brother starts calling out to her, she lifts up her head, and she looks directly at me. And she's just white as a sheet, super scared looking, and her eyes are a little too big. And the next thing I know, I can't see her anymore. And we all hear footsteps on the path, and it's running towards us, runs right through us to the other side, and hear it just stop. The footsteps just stop.
Ooh.
And all of a sudden, my brother's girlfriend just starts bursting into tears. She goes, oh my God, did you feel that? And my brother is freaking out saying, did you hear the footsteps? Oh my gosh, I can't believe it. And you could feel, it was almost like sticking your finger in a light socket. Because if you think about it, when we die, all we are is energy. And that was a whole ton of energy that we all experienced at once. So that was just a great confirming moment, like, wow. That wasn't just me. Everybody felt that. And so, you know, shakily, we ran back to the car and we went back the next day when it was actually open, and we found what she was kneeling next to, and it was a tombstone that said Mother.
Oh.
And all it said was Mother, and it gave a date. So we wrote down the location and whatnot and details about it, and we went back to the head office, and we started asking questions. And as I'm sure you know, unfortunately, if you're not a family member of the deceased, they can't release any information. But the gal was really helpful, and she said, you know what, this is her name. Go ahead and take the name and the dates and go to the local library, and I'm sure you'll find something.
Right.
So that's what we did. We went to the Chico Library, and, you know, we did the, what is it called, a rotoscope, where you... Or you look at all the old newspapers.
Microfiche?
Yeah, that's what it is. Microfiche. You know. So after about an hour or two researching, we actually found that woman and the day she died and her obituary that her children wrote for her. And it was way back, late 1800s, early 1900s. She had traveled all the way here and talked about her family, you know, we're kind of skimming through, okay, that doesn't tell us a lot. Some of her children are, you know, still alive today and whatnot. But at the very end of the article, it had mentioned that she had moved to Chico, traveled all the way alone with a daughter because she had been widowed. And so we looked at the daughter's name and her date of death, and we found another obituary. So my brother had asked me before, and he wrote down before we did any research, what I described the little girl to be, you know, her age, her look,
right,
everything. When we pulled up that obituary, her picture was right there.
Oh,
exactly as I saw her.
Oh, you just gave me chills. Oh, my.
And that was her mother. So the crazy thing is that she was buried also at that cemetery, but on the opposite side. Which is very sad. So if you imagine, you know, you're a little girl and your mom is buried where you are, but so close yet so far.
So the girl died at a young age, I'm assuming, as well?
Exactly. At the very age that I saw her at, she died of some sort of a disease, like polio or something like that. But yeah, unfortunately. But she had been buried in that cemetery, but on the exact opposite side, her mother had been buried many, many years later, so they never really got to be together, unfortunately.
This is amazing to me. You saw a girl, you described her, then you went back, found a newspaper article over 100 years old with a picture of the very same ghost. And when you saw that picture, that was the same person you saw that night, right?
That's right.
Wow. Wow. That's goosebump material, my friend.
I know. And, you know, that was just a wonderful, wonderful day for me, because I kind of, you know, I go back to that if I ever feel crazy, because, you know, it's not like I could walk over to somebody and be like, hey, you know, did you, you know, I saw your grandma in my room today. She told me that you needed a reading. And, you know, people just have to kind of trust me on that and what I say. But,
well,
you know, my brother being a scientific mind is saying, like, get all their information. Let's research it. Let's look it up. Let's prove that it's real. And it worked.
Wow. That is something else. Well, Kimberly, thank you for once again sharing your story and giving me goosebumps.
Oh, you're very welcome. That's actually a big compliment to me. You hear a lot of spooky stories, so thank you.
That's true. Good night, Kimberly. This episode of The Campfire is brought to you by Harry's. Now, before we get back to more of these great campfire stories, I want to give a shout out to our friends at Harry's. You know, they make these free podcasts. Their support and that of other sponsors make it possible. But they also have a fantastic product, and one that I use. Harry's has solved a problem that guys have had for years: paying too much for overpriced razors. You know, shaving with a dull blade isn't much fun. You might do that if you're a guy, because the big names at the big department stores, they're so expensive, you might say, hey, I might use this twice as much as I should. But that would be a mistake, because you don't have to pay about $4 a blade anymore. That's what those big companies with their big marketing budgets cost. You can get a great shave for about half the price. So that right there is a great savings. That's the other nice thing. But then you add to the fact that you don't have to go to some store and wait for 20 minutes for somebody to go get somebody with a ring of keys to get into the vault to get you some razor blades. And that's what you have to do these days. They're so expensive, they treat them like gold. Harry's will go one better. Not only do they charge about half what those big guys charge, they also ship them for free to your front doorstep. And they can do this because they manufacture their own blades. They actually, when they started the company, they bought a high-end German razor blade factory. So they knew they were getting the best. And that's what you get. Harry's is a more efficient company, and it means that they can give you factory direct pricing. Now, I have the Winston set. It comes with this great handle. It's got a nice heft. It kind of feels kind of old school. I like that. It's got great razor blades and your choice of shave cream or foaming shave gel. And then they also have this starter Truman set, which is an amazing deal. And even better, what you can get at this point is you can get $5 off your first purchase by being a Campfire listener. Very easy to do. Just go over to harrys.com and type in the coupon code Campfire. That's harrys.com. Type in the coupon code Campfire. And I think you'll like it. And it's not only just for guys. It's a great gift idea. You know, I know Father's Day is coming up next month in the U.S. here. What a better gift for Father's Day than Harrys.com. It's the gift that keeps on giving. It's just a great, great thing. I love mine. I wouldn't give it up. I'm so glad they're supporting the show. But even if they weren't a sponsor, I'd be a customer because it is such a great product. I suggest you check it out and save $5 off your first purchase. Go over to harrys.com and use a Campfire code. Again, harrys.com, and type in that code Campfire to save $5 off your first purchase. harrys.com. We know them. We like them. We love them. You will too. Thanks, Harry's.
If you love these great ghost stories, please tell a friend about Jim Harold's Campfire today. Now, we return to the show.
Next up on the Campfire is Andrew from Arkansas. He has a story from a couple of years ago when he was with his girlfriend at the time at her house. Very spooky stuff. Andrew, thank you for joining us. I know you've been listening for, I think, about 3 years, as I said, and we appreciate it. And please tell your story.
Yes, sir. Well, I was down there maybe, I don't know, late at night. And I was laying on the couch and watching some TV. I don't know. And I was really tired. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing there late at night. I think it was a game night that we got back from a football game.
Mm-hmm.
And this house, it has a little bit of a history to it. The previous owners that had it, it had burned down once.
Hmm.
And the firemen couldn't, you know, find a cause for it. I mean, there was no signs of electrical damage. There was no signs of anything that could have caused it. So, and what was left in the fire was an unburned bottle and a silverware nativity scene.
Hmm.
And I thought, that's really kind of creepy.
Yeah.
But that night, I was laying down on the couch. I heard a stomping noise, like in the kitchen.
Right.
And so I got up and looked in there, and, you know, there was nothing there. I mean, nobody was home. Nobody was up at the time. And she comes in there, and I was like, do you hear that? Like, yeah, I mean, nobody's here. And she's like, no. And I get up, and their dog, they had a little dog, little pug, and it starts growling at the door in the back of the kitchen. I'm like, that's kind of creepy.
Mm-hmm.
So I turn around, and the next thing I know, I look back, and here's this white figure that's standing right there at the door, and it lunges at the dog for some reason. It jumps back and growls real bad. I'm bad. Scared me to death. I ran out of that house so fast. I've never seen anything like that before. I didn't really get a glimpse of the figure real good, but it had dark eyes and it had a white outline to it.
And wow. Now, did it look human?
It had a human figure to it. It looked extremely creepy. And it just gives me chills to this day talking about it. So.
Did your girlfriend see it too?
Yes, sir, he did. I mean, she did.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it gives me chills just to think about it. I've never seen something look that scary before, and it frightened me. I mean, it really did, because I didn't know what it was.
And now, when the house had burned, were they the ones that lived in it when it burned, or was it somebody else?
I think her grandparents lived there before.
And was anybody hurt in the fire?
Not sure. Really
well, that's good. But it is interesting, the kind of spiritual artifacts, the Bible and the nativity scene survived, and you know, pretty much everything was burned up other than that. That is kind of odd. Anything strange after that or anything before? I mean, had there been a history of kind of creepiness in the house?
Yeah, I mean, she said that she would hear knocking every now and then, like when nobody was home and late at night. You know, sometimes you'd hear like somebody's walking or something around, and you go and look at it, there's nobody there. I mean, it's just the strangest thing. It crossed my mind.
And I'm guessing that after you saw that white figure, I don't know if you were interested in the paranormal before that, but I think after, it probably changed your feeling about the supernatural, I'm guessing.
Oh, yes, sir. I believe in ghosts. I do. I mean, I've always had an interest in the paranormal and kind of wondering, you know, how does it exist, you know, all that kind of stuff. I believe it's real.
Well, so do I. So that makes two of us. And I think there's actually a lot more people out there listening to The Campfire who believe as well. And Andrew, thank you for sharing that short, but very creepy story. We really do appreciate it.
I appreciate it, Jim.
Well, it's been way too long since we've had an international caller. But today we're talking to Rachel from Tokyo, Japan. It is so cool. I love that. And please, international listeners, there is a drop down. If you go to the place where you sign up to tell your campfire stories, and it is specifically for anybody outside of North America, where we can set up a special time, because I know there's huge time differences. Tokyo, I think there's a 13-hour time difference from where I'm sitting today. So we were able to work it out. I'll work it out with you. Regardless of the country you're in, we'll figure out a time that works. I hope you do that. Now, on to Rachel's story. She's been listening for several months, and she's going to talk about a house that she lived in for a bit, and it's a fascinating story. Rachel, welcome to the program, and thank you for joining us all the way from Tokyo.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us what happened.
Well, this house that I used to live in Tokyo, Japan, must have been maybe September, maybe July even. I was in this house. I was alone. I was in my room. It was a share house, actually. And it's quite an old house, maybe about 40 years old, I think, maybe a bit older. And it's quite spooky in general, old and rattly. And, you know, this one day I was sat in my bed and I heard the door close. Open and close downstairs. And I thought, oh, someone's home. And I heard the footsteps coming up the stairs. And there's a little gap in between where my door actually closes, and I can see through that little gap. And I saw my friend walk across the landing, open her door, and I hear the door close. So I walk out to say hello, as you do, and I took one look at her door, and her door's got a padlock on it. Oh, it's still locked from the outside.
Huh.
Yeah. So I went downstairs and to see, you know, if someone come in downstairs. I looked at the door was still locked. I checked the entire house. All the padlocks were on everybody else's room. The bathroom was empty. The kitchen was empty. It was all empty. I just didn't know what had happened. And, you know, I've heard of doppelgangers and things like that, but I don't necessarily believe in doppelgangers.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, I thought, oh, well, that was odd. I was a bit spooked out.
Sure.
So
that's a natural reaction.
A very natural reaction, I think. And so, you know, I went back upstairs to my room. And then a few hours later, my friend actually did come home. So she came upstairs and we, you know, we said hello. And I said, did you come home earlier and then go out again? And she said, no, I've been out all day. And I was like, really, are you sure? Because I saw you. I saw you walk past. And she was like, no, I've definitely been out all day. And I was like, huh. Well, I definitely saw you, I swear. And she said, well, not, you know, not being funny, Rach, but I've experienced this house alone before, and I've heard footsteps running everywhere before when I've been alone. And I was like, wow, that's quite spooky, really. And, you know, I've you know, after that, you know, I did experience hearing like footsteps and hearing a lot of rattling going on, and it was a little bit unnatural. So then, obviously, I sent you another email fairly recently. I contacted you to say that some other developments had happened. Well, obviously, I emailed you originally, and then my laptop died. Mm-hmm. It stopped working altogether. Which was a bit strange, actually, because, you know, doppelgangers are supposedly associated with, like, death or something like that, aren't they?
Right.
Yeah. And my friend got sick, but actually, you know, she did make a full recovery. But shortly, you know, after that incident, I received an eviction notice from the owners of the house. They were destroying the house.
Oh.
Which was... Yeah, that was very, very, very spooky. And I was just like, so was this whole thing to tell us that the house was going to be destroyed, that we were going to have to leave this house? It was very, very strange. And actually, it took me a very long time to contact you because I could not open emails or anything like that for a long time after. I had a huge amount of trouble.
Well, you know what this is reminding me, and I don't want to frighten you, but we've done programs before on the djinn. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they're supposedly these entities that will wreak all kinds of havoc on your life. Now, I'm not sure. I don't know enough about them to know if they're associated with the doppelganger phenomena. But when people say they've had contacts with them, they have like this incredibly bad run of luck. And it sounds like that's almost what you and your friend and so forth have run up against.
Yeah. Well, she went back to her country, but I've had a terrible run of luck since being evicted from this house. And actually, it's only just started to pick up again, and things are going back to normal. I had a real bad time for the, you know, last few months. So lots of things went really wrong.
Well, let's hope this is the end of that and that there's any more. Do you know anything about the history of the house?
Actually, no, I don't really know. You see, the Japanese houses, they go up for so long and they get to like 50 or 60 years old, maybe 70. And the Japanese decide that the houses are too old. So they knock them down.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you don't see these century homes or anything like that. They tend to want to have, I know their space is limited, but they want to have more amenities and things modernized and so forth, I'm guessing.
Yes, they do. I don't know what was there before that house, though. I really don't. I should really find out, see what I can find out. But
Now, we were talking, you're British. Do you find that in Japan... because I have no experience with Japan, have never visited there, though it's one of the places I'd like to go before I shuffle off this mortal coil. But do you find that there are spiritual people? I mean, this kind of thing, have you heard other tales of similar type things? Is it something that the Japanese are simpatico with?
Well, as far as doppelgangers go, I'm not really sure, but they do have their own beliefs. Actually, some of their stories are insanely more scary than perhaps the British or the American or even the doppelganger stories that you hear. Yeah, they have a lot of legends and myths, and they are extremely scary.
Well, Rachel, thank you so much for joining us today all the way from Tokyo. I know we've been a while setting this up, going back and forth, but I appreciate it. And again, encourage our other international listeners. I know there are a lot of them out there to please sign up because we'd love to hear your stories. We like to hear different voices from all around the world. And we're so glad, Rachel, that we got to hear yours today. Thank you so much and have a great evening. I know it's evening over there. It's morning time over here. Thank you again.
Well, thank you very much for having me on the show. I always enjoy listening to it. It was great fun. Thank you.
Well, he just joined us not that long back with a fantastic story, Twilight Zone type story, about maybe a time slip or an alternate universe. I'm talking about Tom from Ohio. He's back now with an encounter with a strange animal. Tom, welcome back to the program, and tell us what happened.
I was a guard at a power plant located in Lake Erie, up in Erie, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of the weirdest places you could work at. It ran the spectrum of just weird things happening there. And this was the weirdest event that happened of all of them. We patrolled a large area that was really well taken care of and left to nature, which was nice. It was like driving around, you know, a preserve or something a lot of the times on our patrols.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, at the farthest point of the plant, you could go down and it bordered on state land. You could walk down this little hill and there was a beach. And the guards, you know, when we could, we'd sneak off and go down there because you had this entire strip of untouched, you know, Lake Erie beach to yourself because it was a peninsula. No one could really get out there. So it was our, you know, our hidey hole when we could sneak off there. And this was, you know, right when winter was turning into spring. And I was really excited about getting back down there and seeing what washed up on the beach. You could find arrowheads and fossils and everything washed up. It was really cool.
Right.
I get down there and this unimaginable stench just started gagging me. I look and there's this deer that had either drowned and washed up or something, but it was in a sad state. I mean, it was rancid. And I couldn't stand to be around it, so I went back up. And so it was like my ritual to go down there and see if anything had eaten or carried the deer off. You know, maybe it got sucked back out into the lake with, you know, the waves coming in or something. So I worked seconds, so when it started getting dark, I'd make my way out there and spotlight deer to see if, you know, it was still there or not. And what I was waiting for was, you know, a really good spring storm to come in and have the waves crash into the beach and just suck it back out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the one night I go out there and the storm's coming in, you know, the water's white capping and just pounding on the beach. I'm like, good, the stupid thing's gone. You know, I was happy. And I spotlighted it and there was this form over the deer that was probably three times the size. It was massive. And the waves were breaking around. I'm like, what am I seeing? I'm like, it can't be a bear because we don't have bears around here, you know?
Right.
This would be like grizzly size. I mean, it dwarfed the deer. And the waves were breaking around it. I had the spotlight on it, but I couldn't. It was just kind of a dark shape hammering away at the deer, eating it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the window rolled down so I could lean out and spotlight it, and the thing looked up at me. And from what I could see, first of all, the eyes were, you know, reflecting like coals in the spotlight. I mean, it was just super bright. The head looked rounded. The only thing I could describe it as is like a sloth or something.
Huh.
And it had a kind of a thick tapered neck and kind of a hunch on its back. And then it just kind of rounded out at the end like a bear butt or something. And I look at it and it's looking back and it's kind of angling over to get a better look at me. And my blood turned to ice. I felt like it was scrutinizing me. I mean, I haven't been around a lot of predatory animals, but the feeling was I was on the dinner table, you know? I'm like an idiot. I shut the car off.
Yeah.
Yeah. I shut the car off. So I'm slowly reaching, you know, to turn the key back. I'm praying to God. And I see this thing kind of, not really stand up, but it hunched up. It basically got to its feet, and it looked weird. The front arms of it were bigger than the back legs. And really powerful build, almost primate-looking forearms. And then the back legs were almost ridiculously small.
Mm-hmm.
And about the time I started praying, it just took off down the beach, and it moved really weird. It kind of pulled itself along with the front arms, and then the little back legs would kick out. So it kind of had this weird hopping motion where the front half was more powerfully built than the back end.
Yeah.
So it sprang. And I mean, it was covering, I don't know, maybe 10 feet at a jump. I mean, it was like a frog or something hopping, you know?
Yeah.
And you could see, you could hear the thud of it hitting wet sand. You could see the waves hitting it, and it just flew. I mean, if it had wanted me out of that truck, it would have been on me before I could have screamed.
Hmm.
So the next day, I sucked up my courage, but I went out in daylight. I brought a thing of Vicks with me, because in case the deer was still there. Well, the body was still there. This is where it gets kind of grisly. It had eaten right through it like a melon scoop.
Ooh.
Now, my dad's a hunter and a taxidermist, and I worked with him for years, and you get to know the biology and the way things bite through something. Everything on this continent has a triangular bite pattern. When it bites, it's going to rip through flesh and bone. It's going to, you know, scrape through bone. It's going to have a tearing type of mark left, right?
Right.
This was round like Pac-Man did it or something. I mean, just straight through everything the same.
Hmm.
And it was probably about bite around maybe like the size of a softball. So bigger than a human's bite would be by far, right?
Right.
Not that this thing could be mistaken for a human, but, you know, we have kind of that round bite pattern too.
Mm-hmm.
So I start making my way down the beach trying to see if it left a track anywhere, you know, just something that I could have as proof. And this was before cell phones became popular, so I couldn't take pictures of any of this, you know, it was mid-90s.
Right.
And I found one partial track that was like the size of one of its front paws, and it wasn't much anything to go on, you know, but the one thing that was nasty about it was it left a talon hole or whatever its claws were into the sand, and I couldn't even touch the bottom of it with my finger.
Ooh.
I mean, I got a stick and poked it down there, and this thing had to have hooks that were like 6 inches long.
Oh, that's something.
And the beach just started feeling really uncomfortable at that point. I don't think it was still there, but I didn't want to be the only guy out there, you know? My walkie-talkie wouldn't get me help anywhere near quick enough, you know?
Right. Well, I can't blame you.
And I don't know what I saw. It wasn't any sort of animal that's around here. And it's not like it's anything that's classified where, I saw Bigfoot, or I saw, you know, a chupacabra or something like that. I don't know what I saw.
Hmm.
I do know one thing. I did some historical research, and the Erie Indians used to winter out there in that peninsula. They'd flush all the game out there,
right,
and then they'd camp out there and pick off anything that would try to come back, and that's kind of like the refrigerator over the winter, you know?
Right.
There is, I'm probably murdering this, but they have a legend called Chunkowateen, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And it translates as the eater of the dead.
Interesting.
Now, this thing is supposed to be more like a dire wolf or something, like a big canine type of animal, and this thing wasn't a canine, so I don't know. It's just, the only common thread I have is that it was eating something dead, you know?
Yeah, it interests me. Native American lore, we think it's lore, we think it's legend, but how much of that has some basis in truth, whether we're talking about things like the Thunderbird, or we're talking about things as visitors from the sky, or if we're talking about the eaters of the dead?
Yeah, you know, their oral tradition, people think that you cannot hand down an oral tradition, and, you know, it's like the telephone game. They figure over time it's going to get mutated and warped. That's not how it goes. They their oral traditions are solid. They learn it by rote, and they've recorded things that have been kept alive through words that would have been lost in time if it was on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew this land. It's their land. They were here first. They knew every nook and cranny before we came over here. So who's to say what got pushed in the, you know, edges of civilization? Because before it might have been all over the place, and it just got crammed into the dark spaces of the world where it can exist, you know?
Right.
But well, still, I'm not saying that's what it was. I don't know what it was.
But luckily, it didn't eat Tom.
Yeah, I'm high in cholesterol.
Well, Tom, another great story. Thank you so much for sharing. I know you have more, so down the road we'll share some of those. And I thank you once again for spending some time around the campfire.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jade joins us from the nation's capital, and she has a very, very spooky story about an old family home where she experienced a lot of paranormal activity. And Jade, I know you're a new listener, and your mom introduced you to the show. So thank mom, and thank you for listening, and tell us what happened.
Okay. So the house that we stayed in, it was in like the northwestern part of Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very old house. It was built in like, I think around like 1910 or 1909.
Okay.
And my great-great-grandmother, she had got the house from, I believe it was like an older Jewish family. And it was weird because like they had the house for years, the older Jewish family, they had the house for years, but they never lived in it, which mm-hmm. was always weird because like why own a home but never live in it?
Right.
So like ever since I was like, you know, when I was little weird stuff would happen, but you know, you're little, so you just kind of shrug it off.
Sure.
So like it wasn't until I got a little bit older that I was like, I think it's some paranormal stuff like going on in this house. And my aunts and my uncles, like my mom, they would experience stuff. Like they say stuff used to happen to them when they were little in the house. And it was always primarily something that was involving like the basement or the second floor.
Mm-hmm.
And the basement was like, it was really old, like, and spooky looking. And like, you didn't go down there like alone. You always went with somebody else. We had our washer and dryer. It was down in the basement. So we would have to go down there at least like once a week. And I would always go down there with like either my mom or my dog. But it got to the point where my dog, she wouldn't even go down there with me anymore. She would just like sit at the top of the steps.
Huh.
And on one occasion, we had put her in the basement while we were going to work.
Right.
And when I came back to let her out, she was like, there was like the wood panel on the door, like she was clawing at it. And she was whining and crying, and she like almost like basically like never whines and never cries. And it was like that right then. I was like, yeah, something is clearly wrong with that basement.
It sounds like it. Well, now I know some other things happened too. I mean, there was a dream, and then there was something about animals you were saying in your story that you sent over to me.
Yeah. So I think when I was around 20 or 21 or something of that sort,
mm-hmm.
I started to have like these really weird dreams. And there was this one in particular that had kind of like freaked me out. I was standing in my kitchen, and it was like present day. So everything looked the way it did, you know, in present day.
Right.
And there was a figure in the kitchen with me, and they were in like all white, and they almost had like this really like glowing kind of aura about them. And I couldn't decipher whether it was like a man or a woman, but I usually leaned, it was more towards a man, but like the voice was neither like male or female. So it was kind of weird. But like they told me, they were like, you have to be strong. There are evil things down there. You must be strong.
Ooh.
And yeah, so then we started, so in the dream, we started walking towards the basement. And in our basement, because like, they never really changed the style from the 70s. So we were still like very 70s style in the basement. And we had these orange stools, and there were like these ugly, like fleshy looking, kind of weird looking things sitting on the stools. And it was about seven of them. And they had like this really weird, like beige, almost like grayish skin tone to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were chanting something that I don't know what it was. They were chanting something, some language I do not know. And the figure told me to touch it. So I placed about, I think, 2 fingers on his forehead, and he stopped chanting and he hissed at me. And he started like jerking and like flailing about in the chair. And then I was whispering something. I'm assuming it was like a prayer of some sort.
Right.
I was whispering something to him and he like froze up. And his whole body just went at ease. And like the whole time the figure is behind me just like watching me as I'm doing this. And then I woke up.
That
and
is
I was
strange.
Completely, yes, I was completely freaked out. I was like, what was that about? I have no clue. So I told my mom, I never told anybody else, but I only told my mother about that. And it was so weird because one day me, her, and my two cousins, we were at lunch and we were just talking about like the house history. So there's a church that's kind of built that's next to our house.
Right.
And it was being built, I think, like around like the 50s or so or something like that. And we found out that in the process of that, of the church being built up, they would use our house to have like church activities. And we talked to like one of the neighbors, that like one of the older neighbors that was still there. And she said that she suspected that maybe something was going on in that basement, that they were doing stuff in the basement. Because sometimes they would have like these weird kind of activities in the basement. Who knows what? And I was like, my face went into total shock because it brought me right back to the dream that I had. It made so much sense that I think, I don't know if something was trying to like, kind of like let me know that something happened in that basement or if it was trying to like protect me or something. But like, I was completely freaked out when I found out that they were possibly doing something in the basement. And that's probably what that dream was. It was like a warning sign almost kind of like to me.
Well, I got to tell you, it's one of those things. It's really frightening when you have a suspicion about a place and then you have a dream where something tells you there are evil things down there. Kind of
yes.
Confirming evidence, isn't it?
It truly was.
Now,
that dream is so creepy.
Now, one other thing you said, there were animals going through the house that people would say they'd see animals that you didn't have. Is that right?
Yeah. It was weird on multiple occasions. We had one of my cousins, one of her stepdaughter, she came over and she was like, oh, that's such a cute cat. And we were like, cat? She was like, yeah, that black cat over there. We looked, we didn't see anything. She was like, you guys don't see that cat? And we were like, we don't have a cat. We were like freaked out because we've never ever had a cat. And there was also another time I was in the kitchen and so I heard something meow. And I turned around and I saw a gray cat and it was in the back pantry and I ran back there and it was completely gone. And it's like, it's no place that it could have went because I would have seen it leave. And I have a dog. She definitely would have sniffed the cat out in the kitchen.
Go ahead.
It was, yeah, I don't know that cat, and I couldn't find the cat. I looked all through like no doors were open. So there was like no way that it could have got in the house.
Yeah, that's scary when you have like ghost animals and strange dreams like that. Now, is the house still in the family or have you guys, did your family move on?
So our family, we sold the house and we don't live there anymore. So,
well,
I'm not sure if anybody that lives there now or if anybody's living there now. I don't think anybody's. I think it's actually still vacant, believe it or not.
Interesting.
Well, you have to believe it.
Interesting. I guess nobody wants to live there after that. Maybe that family that you got it from, your family got it from, knew something that was evil,
you know,
down there.
I did. I suspect they maybe knew something. That's why nobody lived in that house for so long.
Well, Jade, a great story. Thank you for joining us from the nation's capital. Thank your mom for us. And thank you for being a part of the campfire tonight.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me.
Well, we have a return caller. He hasn't been on for quite a while. He did some, I think very early on, we had Travis on from California a couple of times with a couple of very interesting and very spooky campfire stories. But he's been listening all these years. And now he's back and he has a story about a friend of his. Travis, welcome back. Glad to see that you're still out there listening, and thank you for sharing your story. And tell us about your friend.
Okay, well, no problem. This story isn't spooky. As a matter of fact, it kind of
kind of an uplifting kind of story.
I like those kind.
Yeah. No chain rattling ghosts in the story. No. It's all good. But I had a friend. Her name was Debbie. And we met in 1999. I worked at the local library, and she was the head librarian. We knew each other. We worked together from 99 to approximately 2002. Mm-hmm. She had to leave her job to take care of an ill mother, and I had a better prospect, job prospect. So we parted company, but we always managed to stay in contact. You know, we'd run into each other in stores, and we exchanged emails. And it wasn't like where we would send an email every day. Months could go by, but we'd just send a quick email to each other. You know what I mean?
Right, sure.
Yeah. Well, let's flash forward to 2014. I realized that I hadn't heard from her for a while, but that was normal. That wasn't a problem. And in 2015, I think it was February, I had a dream about her. And we were in the library, and it was just like everything always was. But the strange thing about it is she had very dark hair. Now, the entire time I knew Debbie, she had salt and pepper hair. As a matter of fact, I've never even seen a picture
right.
of her with dark hair. But yet, and she looked a little younger, but I still perceived it to be her. So in the dream, it was a fun dream. We were laughing. We were talking. And then I woke up, and I had what I call the feeling. And I am a member of, I believe it's called instantcheck.com. So I brought up her name, and sure enough, it says deceased.
Oh.
Well, what happened was I went online, and she had passed away in October of 2014. I had the dream about, I want to say February, roughly February. And like I said, it wasn't uncommon that we didn't talk to each other for months. You know what I mean?
Right.
And the reason why I'm telling you the story is because I've had dreams about people and even animals after they passed away. And in my mind and in the dreams, they are younger. But the dreams were always after the fact. And by that, I mean, when I would dream about these people and these pets, I knew they were dead before I had the dream.
Right.
You understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, exactly.
But in this instance, I had absolutely no idea that she had passed away. Absolutely nothing. However, the dream that I had, when I woke up, I instinctively knew that she was gone. And like I said, not talking for a month at a time wasn't anything strange, you know. So that's basically what it is. I mean, I felt that in the dream, I don't know if I was picking up on something or if it could be possibly her spirit had come to me in the dream. I mean, she didn't actually say anything like I'm gone, but just the way that she looked younger and much healthier. So, I mean, I was just going to throw that out there that I felt that that was her letting me know that she was no longer around.
Well, I think that's very, very possible. And you hear of these kind of things. I think it's true, particularly when you're friendly with someone, you have an emotional connection to them.
Right.
The fact that somehow they could let you know, I think it's absolutely right. possible. It sounds totally credible and plausible to me.
Well, what the thing was, is like I said, in the dream, at no time in the dream did she ever say, look, I'm gone. I passed. No, it wasn't anything like that. We were laughing. We were having a good time. But like I said, she looked younger. And she looked, like I said, I've never seen a picture of her with dark hair. So I always found it kind of odd that in the dream that I had of her, when I realized that she had passed on, she was much younger.
Yeah.
You understand?
I know exactly what you're saying. Well, Travis, I know that dreams, I believe dreams are a way to communicate and with those on the other side. And maybe it wasn't direct. Maybe it was indirect. Maybe it was implied. Maybe it was just that sense that you got. But
right.
I believe it happened. And again, it's interesting. Maybe your friend made that happen to kind of
right. well,
give you some kind of closure.
I wouldn't have called you to tell you the story if I had had a dream after I found out that she had passed, or even if I had a dream of her looking like she did when I knew her.
Right.
I kind of felt a little, I was glad that I had the dream, but in a weird way, it didn't scare me, but it kind of made me think, because I think a lot of your listeners out there, at least with me, when a person has a paranormal experience, no matter how much they believe it, there's always a little grain in their mind thinking, did I misunderstand what I saw or heard?
Right.
But in this case, I knew the second that I woke up, flat out, that she was gone, and that was a sort of, you know, reliving the good times we had at the library. You know, I'll see you later. I'm fine now. I'm healthy. So I just found that to be really kind of a home run hit in proving that there is something after this life.
I agree. Well, Travis, thank you for listening for all these years, and thank you for sharing yet another stellar campfire story.
No problem. Thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you for tuning into the campfire. I'm ever so appreciative. Always such great stories we get from the community, and we thank you so much. I hope that you'll tell a friend. It could be someone online. It could be on a social network like Twitter or Facebook, or it could just be a friend or a family member. And more we hear that. People say, hey, a buddy of mine at work told me about your show. My sister told me about your show. I think sometimes that's the best way. So tell a friend in person this week. Say, hey, I know you're into this ghostly stuff. I've got the best thing for you, this free podcast called Campfire. Check it out. I'd certainly appreciate it. I thank you so much for listening. And as always, stay spooky. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.